Yeah, we're just coming up on the 7:30, so I think we'll go ahead and get started. So we are recording this, and I'm going to, at this point, mute all. And you will not have the ability to unmute yourself, except for Paul Maria. You can unmute yourself now. So welcome all to the March meeting of the ROPC User Group. If we have any new people with us tonight, welcome. Guests, as always, are welcome at meetings of the ROPC User Group, either the monthly meetings or the weekly Q&A sessions. If you want to join, you can go to our website, opcug.ca, and there is a link there for join or renew. And you can join for the princely sum of $20. It's normally for a year. And right now we have a special on to until the end of the month, where if you join before the end of the month for $20, you'll actually get 2 years of membership. So a little bit of a benefit if you jump in now. So once again, welcome all. And so tonight we have with us Maria and Paul Middlebean. And they are from The Trailing Edge, and they came out and spoke to us last October about general computer hardware. And so they're back to talk to us a little bit about Tales from the Workbench. And without trying to steal any of their thunder, I will turn it over to Paul and Maria. Take it away.
All right. Well, thank you for having Maria and myself. Always nice to be able to talk to people about computers and the wary ways that we have with them. Today we're doing Tales from the Workbench, essentially things that have happened at the store and or, you know, from people coming in over the years, what you should think about for things that you do to maintain or keep your PC running in tip-top shape. So today, I figured the first thing we'll talk about is the top five issues that we do tend to see coming into the store, five prevention tips for your system, and five reasons why you probably need a tech rather than trying to figure this rabbit hole stuff out yourself. And then I have a bunch of photos basically representing various things that have happened over the years and computers that have been brought in. And just talking about those scenarios.
And shout out to Chris for this picture. Because, Chris, we got this from your...
Yeah, for the picture right on the page here.
So thanks, Chris.
So, top five issues. Essentially, most of the time people are coming in because the computer just simply doesn't turn on or is not booting. Because, of course, communication is the toughest part, and in some cases, we don't know if it's getting into Windows and then crashing or if it's just not turning on. So we do definitely see a lot of systems coming in various states, anywhere from the power supply failed to, in some scenarios, the hard drive failed, so the rest of the computer is working okay, or your Windows decided to do an update, except it corrupted itself. So that, I would say, is the number one reason why people bring in their computers. And number two, it was sort of hard to say. I'd almost say three is number two, but the bigger concern is having your system get compromised. And over the last 3 years with what's been going on, definitely there's a lot more cyber warfare out there and a lot more hackers that are taking advantage of individuals. We've seen a lot of it at our store. Just today I had two computers come in that had the 1-800 Microsoft hack come in, and they had TeamViewer along with several other remote pieces of software that were installed, and all from them clicking on an email with a link in it from a friend, and unfortunately that link was bad for this particular person's case. So just be very careful with what you click on and what websites you're going to see. Always good to pay attention to URLs in your emails as well. So for number three, even though we see it more often, a lot of people just want their computer to work the way it did before when you first bought it. Your system does get older. Parts do wear out. Your hard drives can get slower and slower, especially if they start failing. But even running in a normal manner, they will tend to reduce their reading and writing speeds over the years. But the main reason why your computer is usually slow as well is because of software. There's so much security patches and driver patches and the operating system and all your programs. So every single patch they put out, the program gets a little bit bigger, a little bit more robust, and usually needs more resources. So hence why we need to upgrade in many cases. So main reasons for your computer running slow is usually from two obvious areas, your hard drive or your memory. That's usually the typical scenario for a slow system, is RAM starting to fail and being corrupt, or an HDD or an SSD starting to fail.
Well, we do a lot of replacements as well. Like we'll switch an HDD out for an SSD, right, to give it that
extra speed.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because the hard drives versus a solid state on that same interface that a regular hard drive connects to, the solid state's about four times as fast. Mm-hmm. So definitely gives you a nice little speed increase. And number four is the random blue screen of death. many software will not be up to date, or you're using a photo suite, and again, maybe you haven't updated it in several months or a year or two. So in many cases, the blue screens can be fixed by patching your software. But again, it can also be from a lack of resources. You don't have enough system memory, enough hard drive space, and we can usually easily determine that when you bring the system in. But also it can be a failing piece of hardware as well. Definitely stuff that can be very, very mind-numbing, but if you have the extra energy, if you get the blue screen up on the screen, nowadays they have a QR code right on it. And you can even scan it with your phone and perhaps find out from Microsoft what is causing the issue. In many cases, you can get blue screens, for example, from a Windows update. There was one last year for network cards, especially on HPs. And if you scan the QR code, it literally said that this was a known problem, mainly with particular pieces of hardware. They didn't actually say HP. And they resolved it about 3 or 4 weeks later, but that might be a nice way for you to be able to try and get that little bit of extra information for yourself. And then the usual number five is pretty much everything else, like, I can't connect to the internet, my sound card's not working, I can't figure out a Windows option, my email stopped working. Usually email stops working because Rogers or Bell has decided to change your ports and didn't really tell you about it. So keep that in mind. If your email just sort of stops out of the blue, perhaps check on their support sites to see what your send and receive settings should be for your email. Don't want to do it? We can do it for you. So next slide, prevention tips. Like we were saying with the round one, updates definitely help you. They can also be a hindrance, but for the most part, they are there to help. So update, update, update. And I say it three times because for myself, the three most important things are making sure your operating system is up to date. So Windows, in my case, what could be Linux, could be Mac, whatever. That your antivirus is a good antivirus and, again, up to date. And that all your drivers are up to date as well. Number two, there's so many people out there, and this is the reason why I say get good antivirus software, that do not have antivirus software or tend to stick to free versions of antivirus. Some can be very good, and the free ones can change over time, too. As they're putting out updates and testing their product, you may get something that's not necessarily keeping your system as protected as you want. So I would recommend picking your favorite antivirus that you pay for. But everybody has the internet, so if you're not using it, check with your internet service provider. Most of your internet packages come with free antivirus. So Rogers or Bell, they're going to provide you with an antivirus package that you can use. It's just whether you like that particular software or not.
And the reason why we put a picture of ESET up here is that this is what Paul and I have been using for...
Gosh, over 15 years now?
Yeah, so we like this this provider. It's not free, however, we've had really good luck with it, and it's found a lot of attacks on our machines, and
it's kept our network clean.
Yeah.
Now, I am using an enterprise level one at work, but it's pretty much the same thing as the consumer level, except mm-hmm. with a dashboard interface so I can monitor all the different computers. But other than that, it's the same back end. So definitely get yourself a good piece of antivirus software and check with your internet provider if you don't have one or using a free one.
Sorry, my bad.
Number four and number five, number three, backup. Again, I say it three times because there's always your working copy of data, and you should have a backup of this on a separate hard drive. So if you have a hard drive partitioned in two, many people love throwing data on the other one thinking it's protected. It is absolutely not. If the drive is going to fail, depending on how it fails as well, you may not get any of that data back.
What do you think of cloud services as well for backup?
Yeah, cloud services are very good. We do offer some cloud services as well to do monthly or yearly. It really depends on how your strategy for yourself or your business. Definitely more people are going towards the cloud. For Canadian compliancy for customer data, it has to be stored in Canada, and most of the online services that you are getting, the data is stored in the U.S. or overseas. So keep that in mind when you're using Microsoft Office. Most of your data is stored in the U.S. Not that that really matters, but it just they have different privacy laws, and in the U.S., essentially, if it's on their soil, they're allowed to look at anything. So for a lot of our doctor's offices, we have to make sure that any of our backups that we're doing are stored on Canadian servers only. And of course, the I would say four and five are almost, again, the same thing, but just to respect the equipment and keep it clean. sometimes we've had stuff coming in looking like it was in the middle of a burger factory. But hey, we all get hungry, we all eat.
Well, and we all get frustrated with our machines too. I can't tell you how many times I wanted to throw my monitor out the window, right? But don't do that, please. Like,
let us take a look at it before you throw it out.
Yeah.
So, we've had people bring in their equipment after they've had a little bit of frustration, broken screens,
yeah.
bashed up keyboards, yeah. And some pretty interesting towers. We did actually have one teenager come in with his gaming computer. He lost the tournament he was in, and it was for cash, but he's a hobbyist. Anyway, the long story short, his parents brought him in because he had a rage with the wire cutter and cut his entire power supply out of his computer. So
yeah.
His parents made him...
Should have got a picture of that.
Yeah, I wish we had one of that. So that's all I did is just took it to the inside and realized what he did afterwards. Amazingly enough, nothing else was broken in his computer. We just had to replace the power supply. So good for him for cutting the right things. Oh, goodness. So five issues that we can help you with. Depending on your experience level, you may just want to bring the computer in. But a lot of people do like to, troubleshoot and play with their PCs. So... If you run down that rabbit hole and you've checked 20 different things and you still can't figure out what the problem is, we certainly do complete diagnostics of your hardware and software issues. For hardware, we do have quite a robust suite of testing utilities, some from Microsoft and other third-party utilities to test all your different hardware components, and also various tools with our Microsoft partnership to allow us to try and repair the OS without having to reload it so you can keep running with the exact same data and same software. I'm sure we've all had the hassle of trying to reload a computer back to the way our old one was. I'm sure none of us like to do that. As far as upgrades as well, you can certainly buy components from us or from elsewhere, but if you'd like it to be installed professionally, bring it on in and we can give you recommendations and do that hardware or software upgrade for you. Malware and virus removal can get a little messy. Sometimes it's extremely easy to remove. You can get a little Fix-It USB stick that's available online. I've had some customers say they've had excellent success with it, and to be honest, others that say it hasn't done anything. So keep that in mind, and also when you're doing virus removal, depending on your experience level, if you can have an external bootable copy of Windows that has your antivirus software on it, or Linux for that matter, that you can scan your hard drive and not be in the operating system, that's pretty much the best way to try and make sure you're getting every little piece of garbage off of your computer. And I would recommend yearly, perhaps twice a year, but at least once a year, doing sort of a system tune-up. So again, making sure all your Windows are up to date, all your drivers are good and up to date. Same with all, any of your software suites and packages, Office, etc. But it's also a good idea to do a physical cleaning to your computer. Again, you don't feel comfortable, you can just bring it in. We can dust it and clean it for you and do the tune-up as well if you'd like. That would range anywhere from about $10 to about $80, depending on what you want to do. So we can certainly make sure your computer is clean and running to the best of its abilities. And then finally, if you need to get your computer set up, you've bought one somewhere and you don't want to go through the setup procedure, or if, again, you've gotten it from us, we do offer that, and we also offer recovery and reset of passwords. Depending on what type of password, that would be limited. If you have a Microsoft Live account, those we can help you with some of the recovery processes, but that we would need to have you along with us to guide you through the process, because they will do several different forms of form factor authentication, from texting your phone to your sending you an email or a recovery email account, and sometimes that can be confusing to go through, so we can help you with that. But our software tools, we do have some tools from Microsoft that will allow us to reset passwords as well. The main thing we need from you is proof of purchase. We will not reset passwords unless we know you own that computer. So just keep that in mind as well. All right.
So we have a question. I think you answered Natalie's, what's the approximate fee for a system tune-up? But the one before that, I'm interested in P&M's thoughts on buying used laptops, PCs, etc., and things to be wary of.
Well, good question. Hard to say. Like all the stuff that I sell in our store, rarely do I have a 30-day warranty on it. Most of my equipment that I'm purchasing from the off-lease programs, I'm either providing through the store, well, I'm providing through the store no matter what, but I do purchase warranties as well, so I'll have 1 to 3 year warranties. So I do find, like if you're on some of those third-party market websites or on Amazon and they're selling renewed product, that most of it comes with a 30 to 90 day warranty. And most of it is you must ship your product back to them. So one nice advantage is you know where our store is and you can just bring it on into us and we'll talk to you face to face and work through any issues you have with it and or switch it over to another piece of equipment. When you are buying it online and it's not necessarily a brick and mortar store, you don't have that face to face, and I have heard some nightmare stories about buying some stuff on those third party sites. So definitely look at the reviews of that particular third party that you're looking at and make sure that there's plenty of good reviews, that if there is any issues that they've been honoring warranties, things like that. That's the biggest risk with buying online and especially buying used is what condition is it in? You know, how quickly are they going to turn it around for me, and will they allow me to return it?
You also might want to look for the word refurbished rather than used, because it will typically you know, warrant a higher quality system. All of our 95% of the, maybe 99% of the used computers that we sell are refurbished, and they.
Most of the equipment we have, I'm purchasing from the off-leasing program.
That's
and
right.
From vendors that are certified with Microsoft as well, and are part of this off-leasing program. So.
Asking some good questions here. If you're buying off-lease equipment, I presume it's fairly recent vintage, absolutely. Are there cautions about washing out for older equipment? Is there any age where you just don't resell?
Well, for us right now, the biggest, to answer that question, the biggest thing is Windows 11. So if you're looking for anything used that it needs to run on Windows 11,
like we talked about in
October, you got to have an Intel 8th generation CPU or higher and an AMD 3rd gen or higher as well. You can do a Google search for Intel CPUs that are Windows 11 compatible. If you just do that search, it should give you the Microsoft, a link to the Microsoft website. It gives you a list of all the different CPUs that are compatible. And you can do the same with AMD. Just same idea, just what AMD CPUs are compatible with Windows 11. As far as hardware goes, that's the biggest thing that's hit us in the last few years. In most cases, you can still use really old PCs. The toughest part will be, is the operating system that you want to use capable of running on that computer? So the older you go, you're just going to get to a point where the newer software doesn't run on the older machine. As an example, right now, you can get Windows 10 to run on a Core 2 Duo or higher. So if you're talking about how old of a piece of equipment may you buy in the used market right now with Windows 10, 15 plus years. That's how old some of that stuff can be. And I've seen that on Amazon and eBay and the third-party resellers section on Walmart or Best Buy. Usually what you want to look for as well is if they're selling something that's older, they don't tend to tell you what generation the CPU is. So they'll say it's an i5, but they won't tell you what the model of the CPU is. And in that case, it's probably a first, second generation series processor. So that's definitely something to look for.
So maybe, Tom, we could answer your question by looking at some of the fun stories that we have next coming up.
Yeah.
Tom's asking, how do people get into trouble, especially if you know a lot, but not enough. I love that. Chris, no, we would not recommend buying a 15-year-old computer, unless you're like a hobbyist or something.
Yeah, usually the only time I'm selling a computer, like in the store right now, the lowest end one that I'm selling is I think an i3 fourth gen and an i5 second generation. But the second gen i5 that I'm selling is a quad core. And actually, this would be one of the machines with some HPs we have and some Dells. This picture we got up here is an HP. But I'm selling them for $99. They have 8 gigs of RAM, 500 gig hard drives, or 128 SSDs. So it's pretty cheap, and one of the main reasons we keep it is you just need a very simple and cheap internet surfing unit for school, or also a lot of old software, like we were saying, legacy stuff, as examples, alignment machines at garages. They paid, say, $100,000, $80,000 for that alignment machine 10 to 20 years ago, and they just need their PC replaced. Meanwhile, the upgrade costs from the manufacturer is anywhere, you know, from $5,000 to $8,000 for the electronics, and more if they're buying a whole new unit. Where they'll come over and see me, we'll buy, you know, set them up on a computer for $50 to $200, load their software for them for another hour or so in labor, and they save thousands of dollars. So that's where older PCs come into play. It's more of a niche market. If that answers the question.
So Tom is asking, how do people get into trouble? So we can start kind of looking at our funny stories This was a recent image of, you know, a system that was quite dirty compared to one that was clean. And
yeah, had, if you can see the mouse, like essentially the CPU is underneath this black area here. It's a cowling vent with a fan in it. So it's supposed to be nice and clean with all these grills here to cool down the CPU, and right in behind it would be where your video card or your wireless cards would be added in. So again, it allows the air to flow through nicely. And as you can tell, it's not flowing through so well over here. And we do get a lot of PCs coming in for system tune-ups, or in some cases they're running slow, and this would be why, one of the reasons why, they're overheating. They literally have no airflow.
So that's one of our recommendations, right, is to kind of try to keep it clean.
Yeah. This one's an interesting one. We do service a lot of customers that are in the rural areas, a lot of dairy farmers and whatnot. When his machine stopped working to run his milker machine and brought it into the shop, we literally found a family of mice inside. So...
Don't see that every day.
Yeah, you don't necessarily see that every day, yeah. But it is awfully cute.
Yeah. I'm just going to check the chat. Yes, Natalie, that's right. Yeah, it's really important to keep the fans clean, absolutely.
Well, and your fans, they're running all the time in your computer, and, well, all the time, anytime it's on. So the bearings do go in them after time, and also, you know, depending on if it's had a surge or anything else like that, it's been running really hot. Again, that can affect the longevity of your equipment.
Yeah.
But you can change those. Here's another one that was really nice and interesting. A guy had a 1080 Ti gaming card, and he was using an underpowered power supply.
Yeah.
Literally fried. Like the rails on the card, it melted them.
This is when, so Tom, this is a good example of when you know a lot, but not enough, right?
I do find a lot of kids, which I think is great.
They
go for it, they buy all the parts themselves, they do the YouTube videos, and you can learn so much with doing it.
Yeah.
But this is just an example of, I believe he didn't want to spend the extra money because he spent much money on other parts. So it worked great for many months for them, but constant use at maximum
capacity,
and the power supply just decided to die.
Oh, we got some chat. Yes, okay.
We had a CD-ROM come in. I've only ever seen a CD-ROM drive come in once that burnt right off of the connector. But, I would assume that the cable itself got a short in it and just started going. If you keep on, changing a lot of parts in your computer, you might want to change some of those cables as well. So one that I think a lot of people are aware of nowadays is swollen batteries or gel packs in your laptop. We actually had somebody bring in their notebook, letting me know that their trackpad didn't work very well. And as you can see in the picture, the battery underneath of the bezel is completely popping up and pushing up against the connections for the mouse and the keyboard and whatnot.
Ooh, here's a question on power surges. I live in the country and often have brownouts or quick on-off power. Suggestions to help safeguard equipment. Yes. I
would go with a UPS, uninterruptible power supply. If you're just getting brownouts...
Tom answered, perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
The
UPS will take those quick little power drops, and your computer will just keep running as normal. The UPS just gives you a little beep if the power's out for, longer than a few seconds. Yeah. But, definitely get a UPS. That will really help your computer from having a silly reboot or shutdown and possibly losing some data.
These can be quite dangerous. We do recycle them. So if you do have a stolen battery, please bring it in and we'll take care of it properly for you.
Yeah, it's not that it will happen, but stolen batteries are known to possibly catch fire and or explode depending on how they're handled. So if you're removing it yourself, depending on how you remove it, you know, just be aware that it's something to do with caution. And we can certainly remove the battery for you.
I don't know the answer to this question. What causes a swollen battery?
That's a good question.
I don't know.
And I can get back to you on that, but I would assume it's the chemical composition changing. And
is the battery causing, just getting old?
Well, probably? causing a gas to form and expand the package itself.
Yes, Stu was just saying back to dirty PCs. I know many gaming rigs have dust filters for air intake. Is there something similar available for common desktops?
Some of them have them built in. You can get some customizable grill covers, definitely more for the hobbyist. I haven't really seen kits for like particular pre-built brand name computers. You will find like privacy screen covers and keyboard covers and stuff like that. But in terms of customizable grill and filters and whatnot, that's more in the enthusiast's realm with like a standard ATX case versus, you know, buying a pre-built unit where they're using proprietary parts.
And Natalie, just to answer your question, is there something to avoid? One thing that I've noticed is that we shouldn't be keeping our laptops charged to 100% all the time. So that would be one thing that I would... I would recommend letting your battery...
Yeah, give your battery exercise.
Yeah, yeah, so... Okay, sorry, keep going.
So we've also had people, again, doing custom builds where they bring in their system and they're wondering why it's not working and they've inserted the RAM backwards or it's not fully inserted into the slot. When you power it on, if all the contacts, you know, if it's in just the right place and it's touching and bridging two points together... we've actually seen it blow the little gold leads right off the RAM.
Yeah, and we can't fix this.
No.
So.
No.
and we can't fix a broken piece of RAM.
No, if you get mad and you break it in half.
No. Can't help you.
And I know it's more of a joke than anything else, but I have had customers come in with broken parts and ask if we can fix them.
Yes, Tom, you're right. ASSL and HP have programs to keep batteries at the ideal 50%. I've also noticed with Windows 11, my work computer made me upgrade to Windows 11, but it'll do the same thing. It'll keep me at 80%.
Yeah, a lot of them now, you know, you'll plug it in, it'll be charging, it'll go up to 100. And we get a lot of phone calls on my laptop's plugged in, but it's not charging. And it's literally because it's waiting till it gets down below a certain threshold, and then it'll start to charge. With lithium ions, usually a good quality lithium ion will do about 400 cycles or more. Every single time it's doing a discharge charge cycle, that's sort of taking away from its life. So if you're constantly going 9500, you're sort of degrading the battery quicker than it normally would. Where if you're going down to, basically, like you were saying, around 60%. I'd say around 60-70% or less. Yes, it'll charge the battery most new units.
Time to stop smoking.
Yeah, we I'm an ex-smoker, and I find PCs that have somebody that does smoke absolutely disgusting. The smell is horrible. But,
it also causes problems, right?
Yeah, like it takes everything. Yeah. Like normal dust, it turns almost into like a paste and just sticks to everything.
Greasy.
Yeah. Dust we can deal with. A machine that's inhaled smoke for many years, I'd say you got to replace it.
Yeah.
This is one that I think more people have run into than not. You got to respect your equipment and try and make sure you're inserting cables and peripherals correctly. So that's a DisplayPort cable.
Those pins aren't supposed to be there. They're supposed to be inside, right?
And so. You can see on the video card the end of the port is actually stuck in the machine. The fun part with DisplayPort cables is that they do have a locking latch system on them. So a lot of times people just grab them and pull them out, and this is sort of what can happen. So unfortunately, it can be difficult to take them out. You got to try and get those little pincer locks to reseat that down with some very fine tweezers. But yes, that is not covered under warranty.
And that goes under the item treat your machine with respect, right? Because often we can just get frustrated and pull on something without pressing a button or unhooking the leads or what have you, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I just need to take this off now. I think.
And yeah, when it comes to your computer equipment that costs a fair amount of money, I wouldn't necessarily recommend patching the cords together yourself.
You've seen this a lot.
Though. Yeah, I've seen many notebook adapters come in with, the ground shielding frayed, cables like barely hanging on and it's sparking, and then when they wonder why the computer doesn't turn on anymore when they bring it in, it's probably because it's taken, 20, 30, 50 surges from plugging in that broken AC adapter. So, yeah, if you need duct tape, come in and get a new cable. So there you go.
Yeah.
If there's any more questions, maybe we should bring up the chat.
Yeah.
And certainly glad to try and answer more questions. And hopefully enjoy our little presentation.
Yeah, we had fun. Thank you for having us.
Okay, thanks very much, Paul and Maria. And what I'm going to do right now is I can't force an unmute, but I can mute all and change it to allow participants to unmute themselves, which I just did. So, Paul and Maria, you will have to unmute yourselves as well. But at this point, thank you very much for the presentation, some interesting tales, and we had some good questions in the chat window for sure. So I would welcome anybody to unmute themselves or continue to use the chat if you so desire. One question I had, when it comes to drivers, I've always had sort of a reluctance, I guess, to update drivers if my computer is not experiencing any problems, because they do run at such a low level, and bad drivers have been known to cause significant problems. Do you actually recommend that people keep all the drivers up to date all the time, or only if they're experiencing problems?
Well, there's optional updates in Windows, usually there's a lot of drivers in there. I don't recommend doing those. Typically, I'd only use those ones if you're having a problem. But Windows doesn't let you not do your updates. they'll let you postpone them. They do driver component updates for your video card, sound card. Like, if it's been provided to Microsoft and it's a compliant driver, they'll put it in their update list. So you can have components updating and you don't even know it. Because unfortunately, you do need to do those Windows updates. So if you're going to do your updates, personally, I would recommend getting your driver updates from the systems manufacturer or component manufacturer first. I do find that the drivers from Windows, again, they tend to be just the base driver. So if there was unique features to that particular piece of hardware or wireless card, etc., you may get better performance and or results and or features that you think are missing from downloading the manufacturer's driver. Many video cards will come with various optimization tools, overclocking tools, and none of that would come in the Windows driver. So hence why I would recommend that. Also, there can be better quality drivers right from the manufacturer as well. And in many cases, it can be a newer driver to the one that's in Windows. Usually the one that's in Windows was sort of like here's a generic, packet that we provide Microsoft to give functionality. And they don't tend to update those as much as their own drivers. So you'll sort of get away from the problem of if Windows install the driver component and it fails, that's going to get rid of that because you went right to the manufacturer. So it does help a little bit with stability of your system.
Yeah, if I'm with NVIDIA, it seems to be the driver of the month club with them. They really frequently update their drivers.
Again, I game a little bit. a little bit, maybe once a month if I have time. But when I do, the only time I do my video card drivers is typically if for some reason a game is crashing or, you know, it has a optimization feature for, you know, a better screen ripping or things like that. But otherwise, I try and just stick with the stable driver, like you're saying. I usually wait for every second release. So, you know, when NVIDIA comes out, hey, you got a new driver ready, I'll wait till the very next one, because, again, just like Windows, if there's a problem, it'll come out a couple of weeks after they put the driver out. So I usually like to wait a little bit of time before I do that.
Yeah, I use On1 Photo Raw as my photo editor, and they are notorious for if you have any problems, they say, have you updated your drivers to the latest version? And they don't even want to talk to you about the problem if you haven't, if you're not running the latest, which I find a little bit infuriating, but I always end up complying because otherwise they won't look at my problem. So.
Yes, and that is the frustrating thing, because like you say, sometimes you get the right driver set for everything to work, and you do one little update and everything stops working. You've seen that on computers, again, video cards in particular. You'll find that a Windows update will come through and all of a sudden your system isn't waking up from sleep properly anymore. And it's usually something to do with the video card and the power management, and they're just not talking properly. And wait a week or two and the new driver will come out and eventually your card will start working again.
So we've got a question from Alan. What's the fix for the MS Tech Support scan? Refresh or reinstall Windows?
Well, refreshing and reinstalling can certainly fix it, but you can lose all your data on the reinstall, and on the refresh, they usually give you an option to save your data and put it onto another user profile. So there is that. It really depends on how far that Microsoft scam got into your system. In some cases, it's literally just an image on your screen, and they're blocking your screen. Where other times, depending on, again, how far this particular issue has gone, they might have gotten remote access to your PC. So, honestly, without seeing it, at the shop, I wouldn't know if it would be a really easy fix. In some cases, you literally turn your computer off and turn it back on, and it was just in your RAM, and it's not even on your PC. So keep that in mind. They are doing this as a scare tactic, and if it's when you call the number or you click on a link within that image, that's typically when now you're hooked. So the second you see it, basically, turn off your computer,
yeah,
or close that browsing window, or delete that email without viewing it.
Yeah. And then, Tom, I think you might have a broken laptop screen. Tom's saying, I have a bunch of lines on the bottom fifth of my Asus laptop screen. It's gone away a few times depending on the screen content. Don't think there's a solution to that.
Well, because the screen does work from time to time, and that you're getting the lines from time to time, it may not be based on the software you're using, but you might have moved your panel slightly. Essentially, there's a thin little ribbon cable going from your LCD panel to the motherboard, and over time, depending on how it's fastened, that can wiggle its way loose, or if it took an abrupt bump or bang, again, that can jar one of the cables. So it's probably that the cable itself needs to be cleaned, or it's not quite fully inserted into its little connection ribbon cable slot.
There you go.
So if you feel confident opening up your machine, you can certainly try and reseat the cable. Otherwise, you can bring it into the shop, and we can do that for you. Again, the screen could be failing, but it doesn't usually fail in that manner. Usually when you're getting little lines on the screen and then they go away, it's usually from the ribbon cable. If it's from the video card's memory, then typically you get a lot more, like instead of lines, you're getting more of fracturing on your screen, and the information is becoming lost rather than nice uniform lines going across the screen.
Well, that's good to know, because typically when we get a broken laptop screen, it's like, oh, I have fun playing with the levels because you can pull it apart. Anyway, something on the inside. Quite interesting.
It is interesting to peel all the layers off of an LCD to see how it's manufactured. That's true.
Okay. Go ahead.
Did somebody have a question?
I heard somebody.
Well, that was me. I was just saying thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Fantastic. Okay, Natalie. Natalie, my 1.5-year-old Samsung Android tablet has always been slow at startup. It gets updated. I don't have many apps installed, usually closed at startup. Anything I can do to help speed it up?
Ooh. Well, that's a little harder to say because your tablet essentially isn't very upgradable. It comes with typically a set amount of memory, a set processor, and your operating system should be, if it's 1.5 years old, I would assume it could still go to the latest version of Android. But the fact that it's running slow, I'd want to probably see the tablet and see how the applications are running. It just might be the speed of the machine. You can always email me.
That sounds like a great idea. Try Google Play Store updates before you shut down.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Again, if you do find it running slow, doing the updates may help because it could just be system instability or an issue with a couple of programs. Hence why you should update.
So, Jeff Dubois, do you mind if I steal that joke? That's pretty good. Okay, cool. I'm thinking, you're okay with that?
Oh, yeah.
Jeff,
like
okay,
that.
Right on.
Excellent.
Hilarious. Okay.
One thing I think with Natalie's question about her slow tablet, I just wonder what your thoughts are on I've noticed certain number of computers and probably tablets as well, the idea that the slowdown is really just on the startup, and it might be 2 minutes where things are really sluggish or even more, but then all of a sudden things settle down and the performance is okay. My recommendation on that usually has just been let it do whatever it wants to do for the couple of minutes until it settles down. I mean, the concern really is if the performance continues to be slow going on. So, Natalie, is this really just a startup issue, or is it an ongoing performance issue?
Startup.
Nope, she says yes, startup. So, typically on things like that, I don't think it's worth worrying an awful lot about it. If it's just a startup issue, just let it have its time on startup. I have some Windows PCs that are like that, and like they are bogged down for like 2 minutes, and then they're fine.
One thing to check, one reason it could be slowing down, if the hard drive is all of a sudden starting to go, check your storage capacity and see if the number is smaller than its originally designed capacity.
Right.
Because essentially they have a little area that, a gig or two that is to be used. If a block goes bad, it will start using those blocks so your drive stays the same size. But once it uses up that cached blocks, then the drive will actually start to shrink. So just a silly thing to check. If you do notice the drive size is, 500 to a gig less, it probably has a 32 or 64 gig storage on there, then the drive is probably getting bad sectors on it.
I have a question from Marjorie. Is there antivirus? Is there antivirus, malware, et cetera, for Chromebooks?
Well, they're supposed to be more secure. there are some antiviruses out there. I haven't really been using them myself. Like, I don't have a lot of experience with Chromebooks. But I believe I've seen a few out there. So you can still get viruses on them. But what one would I recommend? I'm not sure. I would want to do a little research for you first. For that question and others, you can always email sales at TTE or service at TTE.
.ca.
Yeah, and we'll... you can email me directly to paul at TTE.ca just with your question so I can have a little time to do some research for you and get back to you.
That's great. All right, we've got a question from Kappa. You suggested using a bootable Windows image with up-to-date Windows Defender to clean up an infected PC. How would you go about creating that bootable device, please?
Well, we can do that for you. We provide that as a service in the store. But you can go to the Microsoft website and do a Google search for Windows 10 image or Windows 11 image. I think it's called the Creative, or I apologize, it's not off the tip of my tongue right now, but there's a certain key wording. I believe it's Windows Creators Media, but essentially it'll take you right to the website, and you'll have a link to download a image of Windows that you can load on a Windows key to be able to do system load. Absolutely.
I think YouTube would probably help out too.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody's done a video on it.
Okay. Mr. Google says, what antivirus works on Chromebook? The best antivirus software for Chromebook is Norton, Kaspersky, Bitdefender, Trend Micro, and Avast. Okay.
Essentially that means any big popular brand name has an antivirus for it.
Oh, look, and Jet Media Creation Tool.
Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Jeff. Perfect.
But I think ESET does it as well. I'm just not 100% sure on ESET. I, as you all know, prefer ESET, but whatever your favorite is, I'd stick with that one.
I have a question about bootable media. And so are you running into more and more problems with devices that are coming with full disk encryption, which presumably, you know, bootable media is not going to be able to do a virus scan on a full disk encrypted hard drive?
Exactly. If we're going externally, we have to have your encryption key or decrypt the drive. If you do the BitLocker yourself, in many cases you'll get your code that you need to provide us. When you buy it, like essentially you're going to encrypt the drive and you're going to have a key to unencrypt the drive. We'll need that. But in many cases, nowadays when you're buying a new PC, we've seen many of them with the encryption on by default. There is no password, but it's on by default. We still have to decrypt the drive. So again, if your machine gets stolen, that is one, at least your data is protected. But a lot of people will encrypt it and forget the password. We've seen that a lot. So that one in particular is extremely important. If you do not have that code, there's no way we're getting in.
Now, I believe by default, the full disk encryption with Windows will store the key in your Microsoft account, right?
Yes.
So it is something that you can actually get access to, hopefully before you actually need it.
And that's only if you have a live account as your user login.
Oh, okay.
So essentially, because it's a Microsoft account, they know your user ID, but if you're using an offline account, then they do not.
Okay.
But we can still decrypt the drive as long as you haven't, like if it's a default encryption, just came that way from the factory, that can be reset. But if you put in your own password, if you encrypted it and you have a key, we cannot, unless we have that key.
Not very good to know.
When Microsoft goes off to collect information, does it ever return?
Maybe it's another joke.
Yeah, pretty much. Sometimes it doesn't even collect the information. It just turns off right in the middle of trying to collect the information. You know, those blue screens they haven't really seen before.
Jeez, wow. But,
if you actually mean, does Microsoft ever get back to you? Yes, I with certain customers' computers, when we're having trouble diagnosing the issue, we will contact Microsoft, and we have our own support that we can talk to, and they'll help us try and, with various patches that they have or repair techniques that they got. Definitely. They do get back to us in many cases. We've even actually had them send us beta patches to try on certain blue screens that they're developing. So that's pretty cool.
I found that with Microsoft, dealing with Microsoft and help, it's very difficult to find a phone number to talk to somebody at Microsoft. But if you go into the Settings app, Virtually all the screens have a Get Help on there. And that will, I wrote an article in the newsletter a couple of years ago about this, and it's actually kind of cool. If you use that, you first off start with this canned responses, you know, what's your problem? And then they will spit out five potential solutions, and you can say, did this solve your problem? And you say no. And they might spit out some more. And then eventually you get to the point where you can actually talk to a person. And you'll get put in a queue, and you'll be told you're number 22,000 in line or something like that. And then about 10 minutes later, somebody comes on. And they will deal with you very well. I have found the couple of times that I've actually used it. If they don't have the answer immediately, they will get back to you. They'll phone you or email you with more information. So I found that the Microsoft support is actually pretty good. Now, one caution is that sometimes they want your credit card number. If you can make it a security issue, they never charge for security issues. So if somehow you can make your question something security related, you'll almost certainly not get charged for any support call. But if it's just a general support, you know, how do I do this or, you know, something like that, yeah, they're going to want your credit card number. Now, I've heard a lot of people who, even though they got their credit card number taken over the phone or whatever, they were never actually charged, but certainly the potential is there. Oh, and Jeff just pasted in the 800 number for Microsoft, so thank you, Jeff.
I'm pretty sure my blue screen of death is a security issue.
Yes, must be.
I don't use Microsoft. I don't use Windows all that much, but I have had recently, I've had a few blue screens of death. The question was, the blue screen comes up, and at the bottom it says, we're collecting some information, and then nothing seems to happen, and I'm not patient enough to wait and find out, so I usually just shut the thing down and reboot, and things go back to normal.
Well, when it's doing that rebuild, sometimes it can't actually do a crunch of all the data. It's basically trying to get a data set of what caused the crash on your computer. And they're going to go through that log information and hopefully determine what caused the crash. So if it's thinking away and thinking away, usually there's a percentage towards the bottom telling you, you know, how much it has. If you don't see that, it might have frozen. But if you leave it alone, it should send off the information to Microsoft. But if you reboot or shut her down, nope.
I have never had any software manufacturer, including Microsoft, ask for a dump file. Absolutely never. And I've been told by numerous people that dump files are totally useless because nobody ever actually asks you for it and actually uses it to diagnose the problem.
Well, I don't know. I did coding for 5 years, and I looked at dump files all the time.
Oh, okay.
But not for Windows. I was doing database migration, so a little different.
Yeah. The last time I had a blue screen was ages ago. I was trying to do computer modeling on a very light computer. Remember that?
Yeah.
And it just kept blue screening, but... Oh, wow.
For some reason, it said the video card was compatible, but I don't think so.
No. And that was at work. That wasn't with Paul. That was another job. So don't worry. Wasn't at the training. But did we miss any other questions from the chat? If we did, just repost it, please, and we'll respond.
Yeah, and Tom, it definitely is a good idea to take pictures of the blue screens. I ask customers to do that if they can get a photo of it. It really helps us out. Because sometimes these blue screens are so random. You know, like, you're literally using your computer today, you got a blue screen today, and like you're saying, 3 months go by, you get none, and all of a sudden you get another one. But, you know, it's usually when it starts happening all the time. That's when you're highly concerned. I would say most blue screens are probably because the computer's been on for too long and running forever and ever. 2 weeks ago, the last time you rebooted it, you know.
Yeah, so I think we finished a little early.
We have one other question there from Tom. Just came in.
Okay, great. Oh, it's you, sorry. Okay, so we've got needs to be done to fix sticky keys on a laptop from from Alan. What needs to be done to fix sticky keys on a laptop? Number one, prevention. Do not drink anything around your keys.
Or food crumbs.
Or food.
Now, are you referring to sticky keys, the function, or sticky keys from eating? I would assume from eating. I know this is going to sound really cheesy, but if you can get your keyboard removed from the laptop, you put it on the top shelf of your dishwasher and wash it in a dishwasher and wait about a week and put her back in. And regular keyboards, too.
It will work. I've tried it a few times.
If it's wireless, take the batteries out.
Yeah.
But literally top shelf with the keys facing down. And that usually
let
gets
it dry
really,
for a yeah. week on a cookie rack, and boom.
It's good to go.
Weird, I know. But, you know.
At our shop, in some cases, we've slowly but surely cleaned it with rubbing alcohol.
Oh, here, Alan. Keys that don't type characters.
Well, if the key isn't typing the character anymore, typically you would probably need to change the whole keyboard. The main reason I say that, if it's the key plastic on top, sometimes you can change a single key. Usually they have a hinging system. There's a couple of different styles. One, like they call it an X or an H or a scissor hinge. But you can buy just that single key in the little feet. A single key is usually about $6 to $15, depending on which make and brand it is. But on the base of the keyboard, usually there's a small nipple of sorts, and that's the button that's getting depressed by the key. If that is ripped off or the little toggle is broken, then you got to change your whole keyboard. Plus, if the little claws that are holding in the hinge are snapped, then usually you can't get a key back on either. So in that case, you'd have to replace the whole keyboard.
I'm presuming with keyboards on laptops, they must be mostly pretty proprietary. How much luck do you have in getting a replacement keyboard for a laptop?
Actually, pretty good luck. The newer okay. model, the less likely it is we'll find it right away, because usually keyboards don't tend to, you know, go onto the replacement market till about a year after they've been out. I guess issues with the, you know, the brand and or warranty issues, they want it to be fixed under warranty. But it goes for many components like screens, heat sinks and fans. Usually once that unit has passed its initial warranty period, you'll all of a sudden start seeing a lot of replacement parts for them.
So from Tom, my Dell GigaHub has a port 5001 open and security. Space.com keeps complaining about a dozen possible compromises. I complained to Dell, but they said it is okay. Would it be a good idea to forward this port to an unmonitored port on my PC?
I would redirect it if you can. I don't like any ports being accessible via my router. On ours, because we do Azure server and web hosting and stuff, we have deny all. We don't let anything in, period. Even to remote in. The only way to get into our systems is to literally log in the store or go to where the server is. If you need further, you know, somebody's compromised or whatnot. But yeah, I would certainly try and redirect or block that port. I wonder why they have it open. I wonder if it's something that they use as for a back door for themselves for
Maybe.
Support.
I think that's why. I think they're using it to either monitor and or update their software on the GigaHub. That's my guess.
And as terrible as it sounds, it's probably there to throttle your bandwidth. In many cases, they don't say they do this, but if a lot of people are on, they'll start throttling everybody down. Usually if you unplug your modem and plug it back in, it'll reset it back to factory speeds. So just keep that in mind as well. That's probably what they're using it for, is for them to do administration on it. But any port open is a bad port open.
This is an interesting question from Natalie. I have a Logitech illuminated keyboard. Can individual lights be replaced?
Hmm. I actually haven't tried to change the little LEDs on a keyboard before. It probably is. It just depends on how they've connected it. Might need a little soldering, or it might just be a little, daughter board that's in there that pops in place. I really just need to see how the key has been designed to know if we can change it. So,
good question.
Yeah, I'll definitely take one apart.
I think we have one there
in
parts or something, yeah.
Any other questions?
I thought we were going to like be presenting for way too long, so wow, okay.
Okay, we can give a little bit time as we do a wrap-up, I guess, now. So if anybody does have additional questions or whatever, dump them in the chat quick or unmute yourself and ask audibly. But I would like to wrap up the session, I guess, with a great thank you for Paul and Maria. It was a really interesting session. I think it was a really good follow-on to the hardware session that we had back in October. And anytime you want to come out and present to us, we're more than happy to have you host a meeting. So on behalf of the whole group, thank you very kindly for your time and your knowledge.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for having us. I think this group is awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate the comments there, saying thank you. I just wasn't sure. I'm like, is anybody finding this interesting?
Oh, I think so. Knowing our bunch of people, I think a lot of people got a lot out of this presentation for sure. And anybody who needs more hands on that, come on, go out and see them. And if you're looking for a refurb unit coming off lease or something like that, they're a great shop in town to do business with. So
and if it's a bit of a hassle to come see us, give us a call. 613-860-2001 or email us. We'll try to help as much as we can over the phone, or we can even come and see you. There's a little bit of a surcharge for that, but there is that ability as well.
And we can remote in too.
Edward, we're located at 6 Bexley Place in Bell's Corners. So just behind the
There's Eastside Mario's, and Metro is the mall right in front of us with the LCBO. So it's just off of Stafford Road. If you know where the Eastside Mario's is in Bell's Corners, you'd turn off of, what's it called there, Richmond Road?
Richmond Road, yeah.
Onto Stafford.
Yeah.
And just Google Maps knows where they are, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And if you do go to our website, look at along the top, you'll find Contact Us. And we have directions eastbound, westbound, Queensway, and our Google Maps is right there as well.
Oh, thank you, everyone. This is wonderful.
Alan, yeah.
That's great.
Alan just pasted in the URL, so if anybody's trying to get to their website, that's it. Easy enough to remember, though, tte.ca.
You can't miss the store once you turn off from Richmond Road, because you're right at the end of that street.
Yeah, we're right there.
As soon as you're on Stafford, you're going to see the store right there, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Wonderful. Well, I'm really glad this group exists. I think you provide a very valuable service to the community, so always happy to help.
Yeah, glad to
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, folks, thanks very much. And so later on, probably within a couple of days, the deck that was presented tonight will go up along with the audio track and the contents of the chat window will go up on our website in the past presentations area. So if you click on presentations in the link at the top, the menu at the top, it'll take you down to upcoming presentations. At the top of that section, there is a link for past presentations. So click on that, and there will be an entry there for tonight's presentation.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thanks again.
Appreciate it.